Let's start the last thing we talked about were some issues related to the design of distributed applications, and the last thing in that context I want to say a little bit to service-oriented modeling, which was developed the last couple of years. And where the focus is pretty much on the the service-oriented aspect, and there the point is, well, to maximize the software assets across organizational boundaries. Therefore, in that sense, to basically look at the service-oriented aspects, and here. Services are treated as software assets. And if you look at a company, then basically they have a whole bunch of services, and that's basically the asset on the ET, area. And IT area, and therefore, in that sense, they treat it as assets for the company. And service-oriented modeling is basically to look at the business processes, and there derive the IT systems, and provide something like. An approach, a methodology, and practices to have a very successful creation or design and creation of service-oriented business processes based on the methodology or on using the SOA approach. And it consists of a whole bunch of models. And if you look at UML, that's basically pretty much the models for the software structure. And here, the models go much further in the sense that they also cover the business process. And the point is here also to support an interoperable environment, and we can say. Across organizational boundaries. And that it's not just within the company, but also across the company. And the framework, that basically provides with the methodology practices disciplines, and we can also say standards to develop service-oriented software. And if we look at the software evolution, then we can basically have three levels, four levels. First, something like the conceptual service, which you can consider as a start. The analysis service, where you analyze your idea, design, when you design it, and if you come with the analysis, that it makes sense to realize it. And then the solution service, that's the final service, which is then used in the runtime environment of the company. Conceptual service. Here, it's the inception of the start, or let's say the start. It can be an idea, it can be a concept, it can be, you can use something like idea management tools to create an idea depending on the starting problem you have. Then here, the analysis service that makes an analysis in the sense of, is that a viable solution? So here, viable solution or approach, in a sense that's what you ask as a question. If you come to the decision that, and also if the capacity within the organization is available to do that, then if you come to a positive analysis, then basically you start with a design service. Therefore, in that sense, it becomes a design entity, and you plan the structure, the behavior, but also what plays an important role is the service integration and also the orchestration. And orchestration, integration, in a sense, if you have already an available service landscape, and now it becomes a question, how do you integrate it into the available landscape, and how do you orchestrate how the multiple services basically interact with each other to have something like a service orchestration. And the last thing is then, if you design it, implement it, and then you have a solution, and then finally it's deployed in your infrastructure. And that's the four stages. And you can look at the life cycle of it. You have the timeline of a service. Therefore, in that sense, you have a starting point from what I called it, the conceptual service, towards the end of the service. Therefore, here start point and the end point, and the end point means when the service would basically go out of business, that you throw it out and replace it possibly by something else. Then you would have two types of events to consider during the lifespan. These are these predicted scheduled events. That's typically what you have in software engineering, in a way that you have different milestones. For example, when you do the implementation, that is say, well, here you have the prototype, here you have the second prototype, and here you have the final system, and then you have the deployment of it. But then you would also have unexpected events, and they could have an influence on your planning with respect to the service. Like, for example, if you have a financial crisis, it could mean your company runs into problems, you take manpower away from the development group, and then possibly the whole development of your service solution extends and thus has a major influence. Then you have these two types of seasons. I mean, you can divide the life cycle in two major parts. One is the design time season and one is a runtime season. Design time is here the conceptual service, the analysis service, and design service, and then the whole construction and the testing, and the runtime, that's basically the use of it. And normally the service should stay most of the time in the runtime season. Therefore, what it means, it's most of the time the service should be actually used within the organization, and that should be significantly longer than the design time season. The disciplines, they basically consider the what to do aspect, and they consider things here. In here, you have more like design and implementation of it and testing. Here you have disciplines like monitoring, like portfolio management and integration or adoption to the changing service infrastructure. Therefore, in that sense, you use here completely different types of tools in the design time season or in the runtime season. And what I mentioned here, conceptualization, how do you integrate it into the business process and how do you construct your service? Here it's more like monitoring, portfolio management, and also how does it fit to the policy which in within the company and how its use of the service should be. The next thing is here, which is also part of it, the life cycle modeling, and there you have these core best practices. It's basically, again, what I had here, when you remember that this conceptual service is four stages here, conceptual analysis, solution, analysis, design, and solution, and packaged service that basically goes in between, that you could do some combination of services, integration to also with the already existing landscape of it. And most of it I already mentioned before here, conceptual modeling. Here you apply for the conceptual service, you apply here conceptual modeling. The focus is here not so much on the implementation of the service. It's more like what kind of technological requirements you have with respect to the problem to be solved, but also it provides a set of abstractions. And these set of and there you can apply here with the modeling, you can apply here, let's say, creativity tools to come up with creative services to solve something. Then you have the analysis service. Here you can apply discovery and analysis modeling. Well, what is the granularity? How do you make certain that the service is reusable, but also that it's interoperable in your IT or service landscape, and also you check with respect to the loose coupling of the different services. The whole thing modeling here is you verify if the idea or the concept basically provides some additional support for the business processes. You have here the logical design modeling. Here comes closer to the implementation now, but here it's more like still on the logical level, looking at relationships of services, message exchange patterns in the sense of do you have one-way request response and or notification patterns, what do you want to do, and also how you model service transactions. Then comes here the architecture. You look at the technology and what kind of sewer technology stack you use and what kind of sewer technologies are used, like HTTP, do you use what kind of interaction message exchange in the sense of what kind of protocols do you use. Here it's more like a pattern on the design modeling, that you look at a pattern. Here you look at the technology of the things. And the last thing is logical architecture modeling. Here the point is to look at usability scenarios and also how to discover the services, UDDI registration, and things like that. And the last thing is, they put everything in this framework together. That's what I already mentioned before. You have on one hand the physical environment. You have here the abstraction practice, realization practice. That's more in the sense of abstraction here. That's on a logical level. And here you have here the modeling practices or disciplines. And here that comes out of it. That's the artifact. And here that's then basically the map onto the physical and the solution of it. Here you have more the practices and the tools you apply. Here that's more like the artifacts which are generated by the tools, and that's then the result, and then basically the things which comes out of it. And that's the combination of the whole thing what we have before. And therefore, it provides something like a service, a life cycle approach. And the point of it is that it's pretty much on a business process view. And for example, as individual tools and things like that, like logical architecture modeling or logical design modeling, what you can apply here is, especially here, you can use typical software modeling approaches like UML. But UML is more like on this level. Here you would have creativity tools like brainstorming and things like that. Here you would have analysis tools. If your idea is like a viable solution for a business process, how much does it cost? How much is it, how reasonable is it with the available resources? Here, UML, that's more in this part of it, and also then the mapping to a solution, like mapping onto a real implementation of it. That's all what I wanted to talk about here with it's an idea. It's not really a standard like UML. There exists a whole bunch of other possibilities with respect to service-oriented modeling, and that's just an approach of it. What I wanted to do now is to go into distributed file service, and there very briefly talk about what a distributed file service is. Then an important part of it is consistency in replicated files, because there we have the possibility to replicate files with respect to performance and availability aspects. And one approach here is the voting system. And at the end we will talk about Coda file service, which is a distributed file service. At one point it was something like a competitor to NFS, but then NFS basically became a quasi-standard, and therefore Coda was refocused, and one of the refocus aspects was to support mobile environments. And mobile environments means also that you have a lot of disconnected phases. NFS usually does not consider disconnected situations. It always means it assumes basically a connected situation, that all the clients as well as the servers, they're always connected. And with Coda now, you have also the possibility, how do you treat disconnected situations? And therefore, we want to look at it. The introduction here, well, one of the things is to have of use of distributed file service like a group of programmers distributed in the world. I mean, you had this outsourcing of programming tasks, and that means you have programming of people in India, in Eastern Europe, or in Central Europe, and therefore what you actually need then is something like a distributed code management, and that needs also a distributed file services. And if we look at the definition of it, that goes back to the mid-80s in a sense of that you can characterize it in a way that you have a logical collection of files which are on different machines, and they are integrated into a common file system. Therefore, in that sense, it presents itself as a single file service. And as the user actually means that everything is stored at one location, but it's not really stored in one location. It's only the view or the perception of the end user. Actually, it's stored, multiple machines store the files, and they all connected through the network. Therefore, on to the outside user here, it looks like all is in a single file system, or single file service, or as, let's say, a single hard disk. But underneath, you have many machines which stores part of the of your files, and therefore this perception must be then given through the interface of the file service. And we have a distributed file service that you have a set of operations, and these set of operations are implemented by a number of file servers. A server is a server machine which either implement all the different operations associated with a file service, and or they can implement part of it. And therefore, in that sense, as I mentioned, it appears to the outside user as if the user interacts with a single file system, and in the same way as I've interact with a file explorer here on my Windows environment. Important aspect is allocation, and allocation has a major impact on the performance, and it means the placement of files. It can be the placement in the sense where is the file created. It can be placed that it's closer to the usage. Therefore, in that sense, the transfer of files across the network is very fast. Or it can be decided by the system administrator. The system administrator can decide and say, well, the files are somewhat evenly distributed across all the different involved file servers. Relocation means that files may migrate. So here, files may migrate. And the migration might happen in a sense of load balancing, that because a lot of things going on that file server, therefore files migrate to another file server which has not so much to do currently. Another point might be files might migrate closer to the main user, and therefore in that sense reduce the transfer across the network, and Also, files may migrate to new file servers which become available because they are installed in the network and to provide more file storage. Therefore, in that sense, the relocation might happen between the file servers, but we might also have a migration, especially in CODA, towards the mobile workstations or mobile laptops, in the sense of caching files here, and then when you're finished with your working with a file, the file might migrate back into the file system environment. Replication here means you make multiple copies of your files on different machines, and therefore you have something like a replication degree. Replication degree means here the number of copies of your file. The point is here, copies must be consistent. So here, copies must be consistent. Otherwise, they are not copies anymore. And the intention is that copies do not diverge. And therefore, in that sense, they always have the same content or information content. The other thing is the replication degree is... Yeah, it's dynamic. So here, this RepD is dynamic. And what I mean with here, the replication degree might change. For example, if you have a client here, you have multiple servers in the network, and they are to the outside user, it seems like the file is only once available. Therefore, in that sense, you have replication transparency, but the file might be first, let's say, located here. And now you have a number of accesses by that client. And this, the file service, basically notices here there are lots of accesses. And here you have a lot of network traffic. And if the number of accesses are above a certain threshold, a copy of it will be made and also placed at a file server which is much closer to that. Therefore, you would have a lot shorter transfer of interaction between the client and the file server. And if the number of accesses falls below the threshold, then possibly this copy will be eliminated, and then only that main copy stays alive. And the point is, why you would eliminate copies again. The more copies you have, the more effort you have to keep the copies consistent. And therefore, the intention is to have only a few copies and reduce them, and in order to avoid the overhead of consistency updates. And on the other hand, you want to have enough copies to have a good performance. And therefore, in that sense, the replication degree is somewhat going up and down depending on the number of interaction from clients coming in. Good. That's from the definition here. Motivation, in that sense, I already mentioned some of it. We want to have a reduced network traffic, so here less network traffic, and thus better response time. The other point of it is that you want to have a better availability and thus tolerate certain failures. If you have a copy of a server of a file and one file server becomes unavailable due to network partitioning, then you might the client might access another file server and therefore the file is still available. And therefore, in that sense, you have also a tolerance of faults, especially due to file server crashes or also network partitionings. The other thing is parallel processing also provides you much better response time, thus a higher performance. And the user impression, that's the point of it here. The user thinks it's interacting with a normal central file system, and it thinks it's interacting with a single file. It does not really know that it has a replicated file. Therefore, in that sense, when you work with the regular Windows environment, you can always make copies of your file. But then as a user, you are aware of it. Well, I have a copy here, and then possibly I have a copy on another server because I want to have a backup. Therefore, you're always aware of all your copies. And it's to the task of the individual user to keep the individual copies up to date. Here, the point is with a replicated file system, the user is completely unaware that you have multiple copies of the same file. Therefore, in that sense, the goal is here to transport, to support location transparency. We can look when, if a file migrates from one location to the next one, we can still locate it. Access transparency, independent where it is, we use the same style of interaction from our application. We don't have to change anything. Name transparency, we take the name, and that's basically mapped to the address of the individual file. Replication, we have no idea how many copies exist of our file. And also concurrency, transparency means multiple users, multiple clients can access the same file at the same time, and our file system basically handles these multiple operations to have something like a single thread of updates. And if we have only a single file, it's not so difficult. If we have multiple copies of it, then it's a lot more difficult. And we will see what kind of solutions we have with it. The two consistency types, we can look at it. Internal consistency, that's something what we know from databases, that we have an update within a single file. And if our file maintains two accounts within, the information about two bank accounts in the single file, and we transfer money from one to the other account, it means, well, if I deduct from one bank account to the next one, basically it's consistent. Information doesn't get lost. Or another example, if we have a text file and we make a transfer of a section from one part of a document to another part, the internal consistency means the information doesn't get lost. And there we can apply this two-phase commit protocol. Mutual consistency, here we talk about replicated files. And we have multiple copies of our file. And the intention is all our files, so our file copies are consistent in a sense that the information they have, they store, is identical, the content. And now, and for that, we can use this multiple copy update protocol. We can distinguish between two types of consistency. And one of the things is here, strict mutual consistency. After executing an operation, all copies have the same state. And that's rather, as we hear, rather difficult due to network delays. As we hear, due to network delays. And the point is here, because, I mean, it takes some time to transfer information about operations from one site to another site. And it could even be that part of the network is disconnected. Therefore, it might take possibly minutes or even, in the worst case, some hours to transfer that information from one copy to another copy, because there's just a network disconnection. And therefore, in that sense, strict mutual consistency is rather difficult to achieve. And it means a lot of effort. Therefore, what we have here, what we often propagate, is something like loose mutual consistency. All copies converge to the same consistent state. And it means in idle state, as we hear idle state, it means all copies have same information. And what I mean here with idle state, that all operations are processed. There are no operation requests anymore in the network, in the transfer state. Therefore, all the operation requests have reached their destination and are processed. And therefore, and very often you have something like loose mutual consistency, that you have always something like concurrency milestones, that the file system basically handles operations, and then they would go into the state, okay, now we have something like a checkpoint for our operations. No new operations are accepted anymore. And until all the open operations are basically handled, and when all the open operation requests are basically processed, and then all the copies are in the same state again, then new operation requests are accepted again. And it's something like similar with what you know from file systems, that you have something like checkpoints in a way, like you flush your write requests out onto hard disk. And therefore, it's these checkpoints to that every modifications are reflected on your hard disk. In the same way, you try to have checkpoints that all operations are processed on all file copies. The other thing is here that we can quickly look at replica management, and you would have like permanent replicas, And this approach, it's very often done mirroring files. I mean, if you know from downloading files which are possibly available as open source or as public domain, usually it's not only maintained on one file server, they all make copy on strategic file servers. And that's the thing here, permanent replicas. Server-initiated replica, here, as I mentioned, the server keeps track of access operations. Therefore, in that sense, it has access counts. And access counts per file. If a file goes across a threshold, a new copy is initiated and placed at a strategic file server. If it goes below the threshold, the file copy might be eliminated and only the main master copy is still available. The second thing is here, and that's what I mentioned here, the replica might migrate here to the proximity of a file. The other thing is, client-initiated replicas, that's, you know, with caches. And here we can say, well, a file is copied, a copy is stored in within the client environment to improve access times, and the replicas are only kept a limited time as long as the client does access to it, and then the copies disappear again. And here we have to look and to check, basically to avoid stale information. And therefore, in that sense, what we need with respect to the cache, we need some kind of cache consistency algorithms. And in that sense, like in a proxy environment, what they do when they access it, they check, did something change? And if something changed, they download the information. Or as we look at, when we look later at Coda, that we have something like notification callbacks, what the cache can place, something like a notification callback. If that file is changed on the master server, then basically they get a notification. And then they know, okay, we have stale information. We will later look at it, how that is handled. And therefore, client-initiated caches, you know, also from the web environment. I think we can stop here with the introduction. Tomorrow we'll look at the layers and also then update approaches and then the Coda file system. Thank you, and I wish you a good start the week.